Hello, I'm Veronica Scarsbrick, and to mark the feast day of Saint Therese of Lisieux, I'd like to bring you a special broadcast focusing on her writings. Have you ever read anything she wrote? If you have, or even if you haven't, be sure to listen to this program focusing on the writings of this doctor of the church. Saint Therese, a Carmelite nun who died of tuberculosis in 1897 at the age of 24, was canonized by Pope Pius XI. Who declared that the life she lived in Carmel did not go beyond the common order of things. She sublimated that life to such an extent that she was proposed by four popes in succession as an example to follow. She left us her autobiography by the title of The Story of a Soul, considered one of the greatest books of spirituality ever written. In this program, written and presented by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett, we bring you a selection of readings from this book.
The extracts we've chosen for you were written in the last months of the saint's life, in obedience to the prioress, who'd asked her to write down what she described in the canonization process as Therese's little way of trust and love. Before she was confined totally to the infirmary, Therese spent long afternoons in her invalid chair under the chestnut trees, but she was not allowed to write in peace. Every passing sister, one after another, stopped to talk to the poor invalid, as Therese humorously reports.
This devotion of theirs, which ought, of course, to be balm to my soul, has a rather paralysing effect on my brain, so that my pen has lost something of its briskness. I can't put down my thoughts properly unless I'm as lonely as a sparrow on the housetop, and this isn't a common experience. The moment I take up my pen to write, one of the dear sisters comes along with a pitchfork on her shoulder, passing close by me. A little chat, she thinks, would do me good. First it's the haymaking, then it's the ducks, then it's the chickens, then it's a visit from the doctor, one thing after another. It doesn't really last long, but there are quite a lot of the sisters who are kind to me like this. Sudden appearance of another haymaker, who puts down some flowers in my lap, presumably by way of giving me some ideas for writing poetry. But I'm not wanting to write poetry just now, and I'd rather the flowers were left to wave on their stalks. So it goes on. At last I get tired of opening and shutting the famous autobiography and open a book instead. It would make you laugh, Mother, if I told you all about my adventures in the tangled undergrowth of Carmel. I don't think I've ever managed to write 10 lines without being interrupted. No laughing matter, you think, for me. But I am grateful to God and to the dear sisters themselves for all their charity to me, so that I do try to look pleased and, above all, to be pleased about it. What's this? A haymaking nun has just taken leave of me with the words, "Poor little sister, it must be very tiring for you to be writing like that all day." "Oh, don't worry about that," I said. "I look as if I were writing a great deal, but there's hardly anything to show for it." She seemed rather relieved at that. "A good thing, too," she said. "But all the same, it's just as well we're getting the hay in. A bit of a distraction for you." I should think it did distract me, quite apart from the infirmarian's visits. It was no exaggeration to say that I hardly got anything written.
Writing on the subject of love of neighbour, Therese makes it clear she found it no easier than anyone else to be tolerant of others, especially when she felt a personal antipathy.
"Of course, you don't meet enemies in Carmel, but when all's said and done, you have your sympathies. One sister attracts you, another sister... well, you'd go a good long way round to avoid meeting her. Without knowing it, she is your persecutress. Good. Then Jesus tells me this is the sister I've got to love, the sister I've got to pray for. There's one sister in the community who has the knack of rubbing me up the wrong way at every turn. Her tricks of manner, her tricks of speech, her character, just strike me as unlovable. But then, she's a holy religious. God must love her dearly. So I wasn't going to let this natural antipathy get the better of me. I reminded myself that charity isn't a matter of fine sentiments. It means doing things. So I determined to treat this sister as if she were the person I loved best in the world. Every time I met her, I used to pray for her, offering to God all her virtues and her merits. But I didn't confine myself to saying a lot of prayers for her, this sister who made life such a tug of war for me. I tried to do her every good turn I possibly could. when I felt tempted to take her down with an unkind retort, I would put on my best smile instead and try to change the subject. We used often to meet, outside recreation time, over our work, and when the struggle was too much for me, I used to turn tail and run. She was quite unconscious of what I really felt about her and never realized why I behaved as I did. To this day, she's persuaded that her personality somehow attracts me. Well, of course, what really attracted me about her was Jesus hidden in the depths of her soul. Jesus makes the bitterest mouthful taste sweet. I could only say that the sight of her always made me smile with pleasure. Naturally, I didn't explain that the pleasure was entirely spiritual.
In the next extract, Thérèse tells of a moving experience she had when still a newcomer to Carmel.
I can remember one act of charity God inspired me to do while I was still a novice. It was when Sister St. Peter still went into choir and refectory. I used to kneel just behind her at evening prayers, and I knew that at 6:10, trouble was coming to somebody, because she'd got to be piloted into the refectory, and the infirmarian sisters had their hands full. It was a trifling service, but it cost me something to make the offer, because I knew poor Sister St. Peter wasn't easy to please. She was very ill. Anyway, I swallowed my pride and offered my services. Well, as it turned out, when I got down to the job, it was a complete success. Every evening, the moment I saw Sister St. Peter shaking her hourglass at me, I knew that meant, let's go. I lost no time in making a start, and we had to make a real ceremony of it. I had to move the bench and carry it away just so, without any sign of hurry. That was important. And then the procession began. The thing was to walk behind the poor invalid, holding her up by her girdle. I did this as gently as I could manage, but if by some piece of bad luck she stumbled, she was down on me at once. I wasn't holding her properly, and she might easily fall. Heavens, girl, you're going too fast. I shall do myself an injury. Then, if I tried to walk still slower, it was, here, why aren't you keeping up with me? Where's your hand? I can't feel it. You must have let go. I shall fall. I know I shall. How right I was when I told them you were too young to look after me. Well, we'd get to the refectory at last without accidents. But there were more obstacles to be got over. Sister St. Peter had to be steered into a sitting position with the greatest possible care, so as not to hurt her. Then her sleeves had to be turned up, again in a particular way. Then I could take myself off. But I noticed before long the difficulty she had with her poor crippled hands about arranging the bread in her bowl. So that was another little thing to do before I left her. She hadn't asked me to do it, so she was greatly touched by having this attention paid to her. And it was this action, on which I'd bestowed no thought at all, that established me firmly in her favour. There was something even more important, though I only heard about it later. When I'd finished cutting her bread, I gave her, before I left, my best smile. Well, it must seem very strange to you that I should be writing about this tiny act of charity, long since over and done with. But I have a reason for it. You see, I feel it's my duty to record, in his own honour, the mercies the Lord has shown me. And this is one of them. He's allowed this incident to remain in my mind like a scent in the nostrils, a scent which lures me on to perform fresh acts of charity. There are details in connection with it which still have for me the freshness of a spring breeze. Here's one that comes back to my memory. A winter evening, when I was doing my bit as usual, the cold, the darkness. All of a sudden, I heard far away lovely music being played, and I built up a picture in my imagination of a drawing room splendidly lit up with gilded furniture, of young, fashionably dressed girls exchanging compliments and the polite small talk of society. Then I looked back at the poor invalid I was helping along. There was no music here. Only a piteous groan every now and then. There was no gilding, only the plain brick of our bare convent walls, faintly visible in the flickering light. Of the inner experience I had, I can tell you nothing. I only know that God enlightened my soul with rays of truth, which so outshone the tawdry brilliance of our earthly festivities as to fill me with unbelievable happiness. I tell you, I wouldn't have exchanged those 10 minutes of charitable drudgery for 1,000 years of worldly enjoyment.
After recounting this episode, Thérèse admits freely that her acts of charity were not always accompanied by this uplifting of the heart, and she goes on.
Still, acts of charity aren't always such easygoing. I'll tell you about some of my skirmishes with the enemy, which ought to amuse you. For a long time, at evening prayers, my place was just in front of a sister who had an odd nervous affection. The moment she came in, she began to make a curious little noise, rather like what one would make by rubbing two shells together. Nobody noticed it except me, but then I've got a very sensitive ear, perhaps too sensitive on some occasions. I simply can't describe how that tiny noise got me down. I longed to turn round and give the offender one look. But something told me, something deep down inside me, that the right thing to do was to put up with it for the love of God and spare the sister any embarrassment. So I stayed still and tried to get closer to God. Perhaps I could forget it altogether, this tiny noise. Absolutely useless. There was I with the sweat pouring down me in the attempt to make my prayer into a prayer of mere suffering. Suffering. But somehow I must get rid of the nervous irritation and suffer peaceably, joyously. That is, with peace and joy deep down in my soul. So I hit on the idea of trying to like this exasperating noise, instead of trying vainly not to hear it. I devoted myself to listening hard, as if the sound were that of some delightful music. And all my prayer, it certainly wasn't the prayer of quiet, consisted in offering this music to our Lord. Another time, I was helping to do the washing, and there was a sister opposite me who managed to splash my face with dirty water every time she lifted up the handkerchiefs from the ledge. My first instinct was to step back and wipe my face, by way of suggesting to this over-effusive sister that I should be obliged if she kept herself to herself. But all at once the thought occurred to me, "You're a fool not to take what's going free." So I took good care to hide my annoyance. I devoted myself instead to cultivating a taste for dirty water. And really, in the end, I was so fond of this new kind of asperges that I determined to come back another time to this lucky dip where one was so well treated.
And now for Thérèse's final word on the subject.
The Lord's yoke, after all, is a light and easy yoke. And once you've taken it on your shoulders, you feel the charm of it. Those words of the psalmist come to your lips. "Do but open my heart wide, and easy lies the path thou hast decreed." What is going to open my heart wide? Nothing but love. Once the heart has been melted down in this gentle flame, what a pleasure it is to run along this new path, dear Jesus, this new path you've traced for us, your new commandment. I mean to go on running like that, till the blessed day comes when you let me join the retinue of virgins that escorts you to the marriage feast. Then, with no narrow path, but infinite space at my feet, I shall be able to follow you with a new song. What song will it be? It can only be the song of love.
Listening there to a programme focusing on Saint Thérèse of Lisieux, written and presented by Gilles Bivilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.